Shalom, welcome to Ask JTF, the program in which we attempt to answer questions from our great JTFers. I'm Chaim Ben Pesach from the Jewish Task Force. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery for Sharon Mitman, Shlomo Ben Sara, Dorit Bat Sara, and Moshe Ben Miriam. And this program is dedicated to Ilui Neshamot, Elevating of the Souls of Malka Bat Meir, Allegra Bat Shlomo, Daniel Nankin, Victor Hasdai, Pesach Zeb Ben Dov, Lunita Adler, Shifra Hoffman, Ruben Hoffman, Barry Hoffman, Harab Meir Kahana, Harab Benjamin Kahana, Tzipora Fegi Bat Liba, Yosef Ben Meir, Robert Mitman, Dennis Shor, Helen Friedman, and Charles Zolot. Well, today was supposed to be a big day for the establishment Jews of Judea and Samaria. There are organizations called Nachala and the Yesha Council, which are the establishment groups in Judea and Samaria, because there are 500,000 Jews in Judea and Samaria, and their leaders are part of what we call the Jewish establishment, HaMimsad HaYehudi in Hebrew, which means the Jewish establishment. In other words, they're part of organizations that are funded by the government and controlled in reality by the government. And these establishment groups have always betrayed the Jewish cause. Always betrayed the Jewish cause. They're complete phonies, and that includes rabbis and other phonies. Just, they get government money and government subsidies and do what the government tells them to do. And they themselves have a defeatist ghetto mentality that makes it impossible for them to be leaders and makes it impossible for them to do good for the Jewish people. And today was supposed to be their big day, where they said they're going to go out and they're going to form new Jewish settlements. Why? Thanks to JTF funding the Hilltop Youth, we've created a new consciousness now among the Jews in Judea and Samaria that the danger of a so-called Palestinian state is very real. This suicidal danger is upon us and very real, God forbid. And that unless we act, we're going to lose Judea and Samaria, and Israel will be in boundaries that are 6 to 9 miles wide, and Israel will be in a situation where terrorists will be 1 kilometer, which means less than a mile from the Israeli airport, and Israel will be in a situation where every single home, every community, every school, every hospital will be within the range of Arab artillery and Arab rocket fire and Arab missile fire, and what we see happening close to Gaza because of the insane expulsion of Jews from Gush Katif, we're going to see that happening throughout the state of Israel and throughout the land of Israel. The whole state of Israel will turn into one big nightmare if there's a so-called Palestinian state. It's just suicidal. So because of this new consciousness that we've created, because we fund, JTF has funded articles that have been published that are published every week in the newsletters, the Shabbat newsletters that all the Jews read in their synagogues every week. And so hundreds of thousands of people are being exposed to facts and information that they didn't know before, or that they weren't aware of, or they didn't want to be aware of. And suddenly it's hitting them in the face that this is a real danger. Again, if JTF weren't there funding this, I think that the awareness and the consciousness would be much less. But they admit now, yes, there's a tremendous danger. Arab illegal building all over Judea and Samaria is endangering the Jewish people tremendously, and that we must have expanded Jewish settlement all over the place. They used to say, we can stay within our own little settlements and just keep building and building higher and higher, buildings higher and higher, and stay within the 2.5% of Judea and Samaria that has been given to the Jews. And that'll be good enough to prevent a Palestinian state. But now they have recognized that that's just not working out that way. That you don't have to touch the Jewish settlements, and don't have to touch the 2.5% of Judea and Samaria where you have 500,000 Jews living. You don't have to touch those areas, and you still have 97.5% of Judea and Samaria where you don't have the Jewish settlements, and which can turn into a Palestinian state. They suddenly are beginning to realize this, and this is what they said today. And they said today, and for months now, they've been telling us, today is going to be the big day. Today is going to be the day we're going to launch a movement and start new settlements. We're going to break out of that 2.5% that's been given to the Jews to live in ghettos in Judea and Samaria. We're going to break out of that and say, Jews have to live in other parts of Judea and Samaria. This, the land of Israel belongs to the Jewish people. This is the land of the Bible. This is the biblical heartland of Israel. Because if the Jews don't have Judea and Samaria, and don't keep Judea and Samaria, not interested in Judea and Samaria, they certainly don't have a right to Tel Aviv. I mean, Tel Aviv has much less of a connection to the Jewish people than Judea and Samaria, which is the biblical heartland. So, they said today was going to be the big day. And indeed, they got buses together and equipment and all types of things to build and prepare. And they went out and hundreds of them gathered and spread out all over Judea and Samaria and created 3 to 6 new settlements, 3 to 6 new places, which would be very good. The only problem is it was all a bluff. It's all temporary. Now they're getting back on buses and allowing the army and soldiers and others, and even sometimes they by themselves come in and dismantle what they had. There was all just a show. They're just showing something. They're just making. They had no intention of staying in the new settlements that they created today, the new temporary little settlements they created. They had no intention of staying there. This was all just a bluff, just a show, and spending huge amounts of money and big public relations campaign. Hyping everybody up for this, and in the end, they pack up and leave. See, we showed how important it is to settle in the land of Israel. Not that we're going to do that. We're not going to settle in these areas because the government doesn't give us permission. We don't do anything the government doesn't give us permission to do. But at least we showed them. We showed them. What a joke! What a farce! What a bluff! What a disgrace! All the money they spend on this nonsense, if they would just give 1/10 of that money to the Hilltop Youth, do you know what we could do in Judea and Samaria? Do you have any idea what we could do? The Hilltop Youth are not a bluff. When the Hilltop Youth build, they stay there. When the Hilltop Youth create something new, they stay there. When the Hilltop Youth form a new area, which is now under Jewish control, they stay there, and Arab illegal building and Arab presence there stops. And the only group that supports the Hilltop Youth is JTF. The only group. The Hilltop Youth themselves have fundraising campaigns in Israel, that they do in Israel, you know, in Hebrew. But the only English-speaking group and the only group outside of Israel that gives them money, that helps them, is JTF. What a disgrace. What a disgrace. We must increase our support for the Hilltop Youth. We must give them more if we care about Israel's survival and Israel's well-being. Everyone in Israel who has eyes to see can now recognize the tremendous danger that is building, this ticking time bomb that is building in Judea and Samaria with illegal Arab building, because they're building and building and building and taking over more and more land, and the Israeli government is not touching it and allowing them to do it. While destroying whatever little land the Jews have, they let the Arabs build like crazy all over the place. This has got to stop. Because the European Union, the United States, the UN, and all the billionaires, the George Soros-type billionaires, and all the other evil, self-hating Jews, they're all saying, oh yeah, you got to let the Arabs build. This, the world insists that the land of Israel belongs to the Arabs. It's not enough that the Arabs have more than 600 times the land that the Jews have, that the Arabs live in 22 Arab states with more than 600 times the land that the Jews have. That's not enough. And that the Muslims live in 60 Muslim countries. 60 Muslim countries with 3,000 times as much land as tiny little Israel, which is smaller than New Jersey. But the little land the Jews have has to go to the Muslims, and they also have to take over that as well. That's the position of the world. And if Israel and the Jews accept that, that's national suicide. And so these people were under pressure here, these Jewish establishment leaders in Judea and Samaria. They were under pressure, especially from the younger Jews, saying, hey, what are we doing about this? What's going on here? Well, you know, so they finally went out and they put together buses and had tents and had building equipment and went out and were ready and formed new settlements in different parts of Judea and Samaria. Looks very good at first, but then a couple hours later they pack up and leave. The Hilltop Youth don't leave. The Hilltop Youth are what all the other Jews in the world who claim to be for Israel and claim to be doing things, what all the other Jews who are a bluff represent. The Hilltop Youth represent the real deal. They represent the real truth. The least those of us who don't live on those hilltops can do, if we're not living on those hilltops together with the Hilltop Youth, because every Jew should be there with them. But the least we could do, if we're not doing that, the least we could do is support them. The least we could do is stand behind these heroes who are the last defenders of Jewish honor and dignity and survival and self-sacrifice. The least we could do is make sure that we're doing everything we can to back them up. There are two ways you can support the Hilltop Youth. One of them is online. You can do that online by going to our PayPal account, which you'll find the link to it on our Hebrew main page. We have a Hebrew main page. I know the page is in Hebrew. Everything's in Hebrew, but we do have a donate button, a big donate button in English on top. And you can click on that donate button in English, and the Hebrew main page is hayamin.org. You go to hayamin.org. Click on that donate button, and in several minutes, very easily and conveniently, you can donate generously to help the Hilltop Youth. Every donation makes a big difference. And the second thing you can do, if you don't want to donate online, if you prefer to send it through the regular mail, makes no difference to us. Online, through the regular mail, it's fine. If you want to send it through the regular mail, you send checks and money orders to our post office box. You can either give to JTF, which is our political organization, but not tax exempt, or you can give to VJA. VJA stands for Voice of Jewish Activism. VJA, you make the check or money order out to VJA, and that's tax exempt. And then you can claim it because it's 100% tax exempt. So you can support either VJA or JTF. Make your checks and money orders out to either one, depending on what you prefer, and send it to our P.O. Box, JTF P.O. Box 650327. That's JTF P.O. Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York, 11365. One last time, JTF P.O. Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York, 11365. If we support the Hilltop Youth, that's supporting the land of Israel. That's being pro-Israel. Anything less than that is not. And now let's go to our questions from our great JTFers. One second, just give me one second here, and we're going to our questions from our great JTFers here. Sorry for the delay. And we start off with our friend Yimach Shmoda Islam, who writes, and I quote, Dei Chaim, what are your thoughts on the following five countries? All were once part of the former Soviet Union and are all Muslim majority. And the five countries are Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, and Kyrgyzstan. I don't know if I pronounced the last one correctly. Kyrgyzstan, I hope so. Anyway, my thoughts are that we cannot trust countries where the majority of the population is Muslim. Islam is a religion which preaches hatred against non-Muslims and which creates a culture of violence and hatred and a depraved culture of all types of terrible things, brutality toward women, pedophilia. The children are abused. The founder of Islam, Muhammad, was a pedophile. Who married a six-year-old girl, Aisha. That was his last wife, Aisha. He was in his 50s when he married a six-year-old girl. And the hadith says that he consummated the relationship. In other words, they had sexual relations when she was 9 years old. This is pedophilia. And that's the founder of their religion. It's a religion which we've seen the violence, the hatred. We've seen that they perpetrated Holocaust against their fellow Muslims. Now, these five particular countries have Muslims who are more secular. They're not very devout Muslims because they lived under the Soviet rule and they became secularized. So they're not really devout Muslims, but still, even if they claim to be adherents to that religion, they can always return to being devout Muslims at any time, and the seeds of that hatred are planted within them. Unless they give up the religion, because the religion is a religion that endangers the world. Thank you, Yimach Shmoda Islam. And we now go to our other friend Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote: "One, why do non-homosexuals use the word pride to refer to gay pride without saying gay before it?" Unquote. because they want to be politically correct and they want to do whatever the homosexual extremists and sick people. These are sick people, homosexuals, and unfortunately we live in a sick society which allows them to dictate to everybody what the language we're going to use. We're not allowed to say, by the way, many of them say we're not allowed to say man or woman anymore. You can't say man or woman, or you're not allowed to use those terms anymore because it's offensive to transgenders. So the homosexuals dictate to us what we're allowed to say and what we're not allowed to say. The media backs them up and all these other people back them up. And this is the situation we're in. We're letting the mental patients run the asylum. And now Binyamin writes, and I quote, discuss the following people. The first three people are my question from last 2 weeks, but I'm leaving those three on the list since they are Jewish, so you can discuss if they're self-hating Jews and things they have done to harm their own people. Okay, well, I'm discussing it in groups here because Binyamin, it's a long list, and, you know, and again, we have to remember, we only want two questions, and these lists are really like a way of getting around that rule. It's not really, we're really not adhering to our rule here, and the reason we only want two questions is because we want to be able to get, we want to be able to move on to other people and not spend too much time on just one question, or on just one person asking questions. Anyway, the first three, Alan Greenspan, Ben Bernanke, and Janet Yellen, are all self-hating Jews, that's all true. They're part of an establishment which is against Israel and the Jewish people, and that makes them enemies of their own people. Alan Greenspan's wife, Andrea Mitchell, Yimash Mavazachra, is a reporter for many, many years for NBC News and has done many stories against Israel. She's a vicious enemy of Israel and a supporter of anti-Israel policies and people and positions. And Alan Greenspan, you know, he's part of that same clique of people who would eliminate Israel. I mean, they don't really want Israel to exist. And so, you know, it's obvious that these are enemies of Israel. And Ben Bernanke and Janet Yellen, the same thing. I mean, I met Ben Bernanke's mother in a bank once. She was bragging to everybody in the bank that her son... maybe it wasn't Ben Bernanke. I might be mistaken. It might have been someone else. I don't even remember if it was Ben Bernanke or if it was the new Secretary of the Treasury under Obama. I don't remember which one it was. But I think it might have been. I might be mistaken. It might have been Secretary of Treasury under Obama. But it doesn't make a difference. These people work for an establishment that does things that is harmful to Israel and the Jewish people and to society. Janet Yellen, of course, is a left-wing Democrat who's serving Joe Biden now and who supported Obama and supported Clinton and supported all the enemies of the Jewish people. And then we have a list of politicians here: Al Gore, John McCain, Sarah Palin, Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan, and Liz Cheney. That's six politicians. They're not Jewish, but all six of them support a Palestinian state. All six of them support Israeli national suicide. All six of them would betray Israel and the Jewish people in a second. And that includes Sarah Palin, by the way, who claimed to be evangelical Christian and pro-Israel, completely full of baloney. You know, I personally heard her on the radio being interviewed saying that she supports what they call a two-state solution, which is vivisecting Israel and destroying Israel. So that's all of these people are frauds. They're all frauds and all enemies of Israel. And the fact that they support suicide for Israel means that these are not people that we should be supporting. We supported Romney against Obama in 2000, in 2012, when Romney ran against Obama, just because Obama's policies were so dangerous with the Iran agreement and the Iran nuclear agreement and the other things that Obama wanted to do. So we supported Romney as a lesser of the evils, but remember, a lesser of the evils is still evil. Thank you, Binyamin. And now we go to our great friend Hidavatsky Noachide, who always asks great questions, and he writes, and I quote, 1, which actions make a Gentile liable for idol worship as a capital sin? That's a complicated question, Hirvatsky, because there's a machloket, there are differences of opinion on that. With Chazal being the rabbinic authorities in the Talmud and part of the oral law, and their rulings are part of oral law, and the oral Torah, that means. And again, there are differences of opinion on that issue. There are certain things that I think are pretty universally accepted, though, that could bring the death penalty, that could bring a death penalty for a Gentile. When it comes to idol worship, first of all, we have to understand that the Judaism is more tolerant of Gentiles engaging in this behavior than Jews, generally speaking. For the simple reason that Gentiles were not brought up in a tradition which rejects idol worship in many cases, and you know, if they were brought up that way, we give them, you know, they are more likely to get a second chance and have more understanding, and you know, so there is more of a tolerance in that respect. By the way, there is a difference, a distinction in Judaism between Gentiles and Bnei Noach. Bnei Noach are Gentiles. The followers of Noach are Gentiles. But Bnei Noach are a different category of Gentiles, because Bnei Noach are part of a covenant with God. Someone who agrees to be a Ben Noach and who follows the seven commandments, at least seven commandments that the Noahides are required to follow. Someone who does that has entered into a covenant with God, with Hashem. So they are on a much higher level. They're considered to be spiritually on a higher level. And that also means that the rules in regard to Bnei Noach are often stricter than they are for Gentiles in general. But anyway, you asked about the capital punishment for idol worship for Gentiles. When does that come into play? There are certain examples where I think most of the rabbinic authorities would agree. First of all, a Gentile who attempts to persuade a Jew to worship idols certainly is liable to receive capital punishment. That's for sure. A Gentile who, and many Gentiles have done that historically, have tried to pressure Jews to worship idols and tried to convince them or pressure them, especially the Christian missionaries, and that is something that can bring capital punishment, because they're endangering the soul, the eternal soul of that Jew. Another example is if a second example would be if Gentiles prophesy in the name of the idol, or if they claim they're a prophet. And you have a lot of Christian preachers who claim to be prophets, who claim that Yeshu speaks to them and they hear his voice, just all types of insanity. But if they make that claim and they prophesy in the name of the idol, that can also make them liable to capital punishment. Now, of course, this doesn't mean that we're advocating that people go out and start killing people. We can't do that, because the laws of the laws are such that we're unable to do that. We're talking about halachically, under Jewish law, if it was a Jewish state and under Jewish rule, what could happen? What would happen? And if a Gentile in a situation like that tries to persuade a Jew in the Jewish state to worship idols, or tries to prophesy in the name of an idol, that could bring capital punishment. Those are two examples. A third example would be if a Gentile urges others to worship himself. What does it mean to worship himself? In other words, he claims to be a god himself. A Gentile gets up and claims that he's God. And we have one very famous example of this, but it wasn't a Gentile. This was Yeshua. I don't believe that Yeshua actually claimed to be God. I think that was all added later on. But he claimed to be the Messiah and committed treason and did some horrific things that also bring on terrible punishment, the maximum punishment. But in any event, if you have a Gentile who gets up and claims to be God and urges people to worship him, which we've had many times in history from rulers and leaders, you've had situations like this, then that also would be someone who would be liable to receive capital punishment for claiming to be God himself. That's the third example. Fourth example is someone who practices idolatry in the land of Israel. Idolatry is a bad thing anywhere in the world, but especially in the land of Israel. If you'll notice, the prophets in the Bible do not preach against the Gentiles outside the land of Israel. They don't condemn the Gentiles who worship idols outside the land of Israel. The prophets in the Bible, you don't find prophets in the Bible attacking them for worshiping idols outside the land of Israel. All of the attacks are directed against those who do it within the land of Israel, because the land of Israel, within the land of Israel, there are certain rules, and anyone who engages in idolatry there is violating the most basic rules, because that's really God's sacred land. Outside of Israel, there is more flexibility, arguably, and more leniency. Again, everything I'm saying is subject to disagreement. There are rabbis who agree with some of the things I just said, and there might be rabbis who disagree with some of the things I just said, because this is a subject where we don't necessarily have any clearly defined rules, any clearly defined lines. And a lot of it depends if this is taking place in Israel, in Eretz Yisrael, or in the lands outside of Israel. A lot of it depends if the Gentiles are B'nai Noach or not B'nai Noach. Excuse me. And a lot of it depends what type of idolatry we're speaking about. Is it an idol who is just an intermediary between the person doing the worshiping and God, which is forbidden, or is it an actual idol whom the person is claiming to be, that's claiming that that's God himself, that the idol is God himself? So these are all distinctions that are made that can make a difference. Hirvatsky now asks a second question too. In March 2018, Martin Seller and his girlfriend Brittany Pettibone were denied entry, detained, and deported from the United Kingdom. How do you view their situation, considering that they were denied entry, detained, and deported from Israel? Unquote. The situation is very clear. Martin Seller's a Nazi. Always was, always will be. First of all, he was an open Nazi all his life. He's in his 30s now, but all his life he was an open Nazi in his youth. He actually was arrested caught painting swastika or placing swastikas on a temple, and did many other things, that went to demonstrations with the Nazis and openly proclaimed himself to be a Nazi. Then in 2016 he said he's no longer a Nazi. Why? Because he wanted entry into the U.S. and he was denied entry. He was being denied entry into the United Kingdom, U.S. and other countries. So now he's saying he's no longer a Nazi because he wants to get into the U.S. He wants to settle in Idaho. I wonder why Idaho. Because in Idaho you have neo-Nazis living there, and he wants to live among his fellow Nazis. But he wants to settle in the U.S. and openly said so, and so he claimed he's no longer a Nazi in order to get into the U.S. And also he doesn't want his websites and his posts and his activities on social media to be banned anymore. So he's claiming now that he's not a Nazi now, that he's no longer a Nazi, but in reality, when you see the things he's posting and the things that he stands for, he hasn't changed at all. It's all a lie. Thank you, Hirvatsky Noachide. And we now go to our good friend Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, "Do you really believe that there have never been any elections stolen in this country?" Unquote. No, I think that the 1960 presidential election was stolen. In 1960, Richard Nixon was the vice president. He was Dwight Eisenhower's vice president, and he was the Republican nominee to run for the presidency. And his opponent was John F. Kennedy, a senator from Massachusetts. It was Kennedy versus Nixon in 1960. And Kennedy supposedly beat Nixon by about 100,000 votes. It was so close, very, very close, the election, super close. And in two states, Texas and Illinois, it was especially close. Just a few thousand votes separated the two candidates. In Illinois, Nixon was leading until suddenly Richard Daley, whom I think Chicago Jew would know who I'm talking about, Richard Daley from the Daley political machine in Chicago in Cook County, seized all the ballots and said, "We're holding the ballots for now. We're going to count the ballots ourselves." And he seized the ballots, and all of a sudden he came up with just enough votes to put Kennedy over in Illinois, even though Nixon had been leading. All of a sudden, he found the votes. He seized the ballots and found the votes to put Kennedy just over the top. Now, was stolen in Illinois. That was stolen. And in Texas, same story. In Texas, Lyndon Johnson was called Landslide Lyndon because he was elected to the Senate by 87 votes. He won by just 87 votes. And everybody knows those votes were stolen. That dead people voted, and people's dogs voted, and people's little children voted, and complete joke. And people voted more than once. In Texas, there was widespread voter fraud, and Lyndon Johnson was elected. Now, if that had not happened, if Texas and Illinois had voted honestly, I think Nixon would have won in both states. And I think that, and if Nixon had won in Texas and in Illinois, he would have been president in 1960. So I believe the 1960 election was stolen. Nixon chose not to contest it. I don't know why he did that, but he chose not to contest it. And so Kennedy became president. But Nixon was bitter. He knew that it was stolen from him. And that's one of the reasons for Watergate and for his bitterness. He was bitter ever since that happened to him, because he knew that he should have been elected. He should have been made president in 1960. Now, having a situation like that where you can steal an election where there's a separation of several thousand votes, that's something that possibly can occur. You cannot steal an election, realistically, in this day and age, when you lose by over 7 million votes, which is Trump lost to Biden by over 7 million votes. You can't do it. And Trump lost to Biden in every single state, every major state where there, you know, which he had carried in 2016 against Hillary Clinton, against Biden. He lost those states, state after state: Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Arizona, Georgia. He lost all of those states. And Republican poll watchers were there when almost all of the ballots were counted, and when there was a recount, his poll watchers were present. He had Republican poll watchers and Trump poll watchers present, and dozens of courts all over the country, state courts, federal courts, all reviewed it. None of them, not a single court, ever found any legitimacy to his claims. All lies, all baloney, all a bluff from Trump. And that includes, by the way, judges who were appointed by Trump himself, ruled unanimously. All the judges throughout the country, in all the states, in all the federal court, dozens of courtrooms, all ruled unanimously that there's no merit whatsoever to any of his challenges. And again, these were Trump-appointed judges who made these rulings. Now, Trump can claim it's all a plot, it's all a conspiracy against him, and it's baloney, baloney, egotistical orange clown, the biggest sore loser in American history, and two Senate seats that should have gone Republican in special elections after 2000. December 2020 was special election for two Senate seats in Georgia. Those seats should have gone Republican, and the Republicans would have controlled the Senate. Those were lost because Trump forced the candidates to make the stolen election claim the big issue, and created division and problems and chaos in that election. So the Democrats won both Senate seats in Georgia because of Trump, because of his interference. And his interference can endanger the Republicans. They're supposed to win a big majorities in this November. They should really win big. The only thing standing in their way right now is, one of the things standing in their way, at least right now, is Donald Trump's ridiculous interference. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And we go now to, and by the way, Chicago Jew, just so that you'll know, I don't like people who come up with conspiracies that are false. And the reason I don't like people come up with false conspiracies and lying conspiracy theories is because when the real conspiracy, like the 1960 election between Nixon and Kennedy, when there's a real conspiracy and something really does happen that's scandalous, then you're like the boy who cried wolf. Nobody believes you anymore. When something like that really does happen. And that's the problem with Trump, and that's the problem with these conspiracy people who come up with conspiracies. There are real conspiracies in the world, but you have to pick the right one. You have to be logical and use your head and pick the right one, one that really has merit. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And now we go to Our friend Ram 770, I'm going to quickly translate what he writes. Shalom Chaim, Hatzadik, Mashlomcha, Ani Be'ad, Naase Mifkash, Zoom, Nosaf, Anashim Sheli, Ohavim Etze, Gam, Bema, Itamar Ben Gevir, Yargiz Otcha, Gam Nir Weinberg, Rotze Leshatef Itcha, Peula, Leargen Spam, Betwitter, Leman Noor HaGevaot. Okay, I'm going to answer Ram. Ram, ani mudeh lecha al kol ze. Kimo shani amalti, ani pashut asuk midai achshav. Az biglal ze lo asinu od zoom. Asinu zoom lifnei kama shavuot. Nehneti, asinu shnei mifkashei zoom ad ko. Nehneti. אבל לא, אבל כשיהיה לי זמן פנוי, אני כן מוכן לעשות עוד. לגבי ניר ויינברג, כן, צריך לשקול מה לעשות למען נוער הגבעות. אני מסכים איתך. וגם דוב הלברטל, הוא רוצה קשר איתי, רם כותב. בסדר. נדבר על זה כשיהיה לי זמן, רם. And I just told Ram that, first of all, I thank him for all that he's doing. אני מודה לך על כל מה שאתה עושה ועשית, רם. אני חייב לומר את זה, ואני מודה לך גם בעברית וגם באנגלית בתוכנית הזאת. I thank you both in English and in Hebrew on this program for all that you've done, Ram. Basically what I said to Ram is that we'll discuss all the things he's suggesting here in this post that he wants to do. These are things we'll discuss when I have enough time to do another Zoom and have enough time to do some of the things that he's suggesting. Hopefully we'll be able to discuss doing them. Ani modeh lecha Ram shuv. And now we go to our friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, how much do you know about the Ark of the Covenant? I'm a fan of the movie Raiders of the Ark. I would like to ask you if some of the stories in the movie are accurate with the actual stories of the Ark. Thanks. I don't think so, Joe. I don't believe that it's accurate. I think that this is mythology. I don't believe that they actually... I don't think it's for real. I think that this is just Hollywood hype. I'm sorry to tell you that because you're a fan of the movie, and I didn't see the movie, but people say that it was a very good movie. It was very exciting with good acting, so I could understand. But in my opinion, this is Hollywood hype. Thank you, Joe. And now we go to our other friend, Kalman Ben Menachem, who writes, and I quote, Chaim, how did the civil rights movement go from being a struggle for equality to black rage, chimps out, and twerking? Thank you. Kalman Ben Menachem. The problem was the blacks in the beginning ran a very disciplined movement, really, which was really managed for them by Jews, by self-hating Jews. The self-hating Jews were in charge of the public relations. They worked with Martin Luther King and with other black leaders and with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and other black organizations, and they put together a very disciplined, organized movement with the support of the news media and support of all the establishment in the United States, all the important establishment figures, and imposed on the South and the whole country so-called civil rights laws, which in reality, what they did is they gave civil rights to blacks and took civil rights away from whites. Whites have no civil rights anymore. Discriminating against whites is not only permitted in this country, the courts order you to discriminate against whites. Affirmative action is discrimination against whites, Asians, and Jews, and that type of racist discrimination, blatantly racist discrimination, is court-ordered discrimination right now. The courts order you to discriminate in the most racist way imaginable against whites, Asians, and Jews, just because they're hardworking and they succeed. And so that's what the so-called civil rights movement represents. You know, when the issue of these civil rights amendments were being debated in the 1960s on the floor of the U.S. Senate, a senator from Minnesota named Hubert Humphrey, who eventually became vice president and ran for president. Senator from Minnesota named Hubert Humphrey said, if this leads to discrimination against whites, because the Southern senators were warning that this, you know, this is going to lead to discrimination against white people. And of course, we see that they were proven right. But anyway, Humphrey at the time said, if that happens, I will eat the paper on which this Civil Rights Amendment is written. I will come on the Senate floor and eat the paper on which it is written. Humphrey never kept his promise, even though in his time, he eventually died of cancer, but in the 70s, but in his time, there was no question that it had, in fact, become a movement of discrimination against whites. And he never kept his promise. The reason that blacks eventually did what they did, they eventually became the Black Panthers and the Black Muslims and all types of hateful, evil organizations, and now BLM. The reason all of that happened is because the movement was always based upon supporting an evil community that is immoral and evil and filled with hatred and filled with jealousy against people who had nothing to do with slavery and are not guilty, and not only are not guilty of slavery, the Jews did everything to help the blacks. The blacks should be bowing down to the Jews and thanking them day and night for everything the Jews did for them, because the Jews owed them nothing. Nothing. And the Jews to this day keep helping them. I don't know why, but they do. And instead of being grateful to the Jews, their jealousy, their hatred, they hate the Jews more than they hate the Ku Klux Klan now. So you have to be a self-hating Jew to continue to support this. To continue to support these people, you have to be a self-hating Jew. Simple. Pure and simple. The anti-Semitism, the viciousness, the murder of Jews. How many Jews have been murdered by black murderers all across the country? I mean, I know of cases of just people, friends of my mother, friend of my mother whose son was murdered by blacks. I mean, just how many Jews have been murdered by blacks? I know at least three or four cases of Jews, just from my own little circle of friends and acquaintances. I know three or four cases of Jews that were actually murdered by black murderers. Blacks have murdered hundreds of thousands of people in this country. You know, the vast majority of murderers in this country are black. And, I mean, we're supposed to overlook that if you had a sizable group in the black community who said, hey, wait a minute, this is bad, you know, and we're not anti-Semites, and we appreciate what you Jews do, and we thank you for what you did, and these anti-Semites, we condemn them, we're against them. If that happened, it'd be a different story, but we don't have that. Virtually the whole black community supports the Obamas and the Jesse Jacksons and the Farrakhans. They don't deserve anything. Jews owe them nothing, and they should get nothing. They actually deserve to get bad things from Jews. Jews should be working against them because of what they did to the Jewish people. But at the very least, Jews should not be supporting them. Thank you, Kalman. And now we go to Roi, who asks a question in Hebrew, which we will read and quickly translate. Shalom lecha Chaim Hayakar, ma shlomcha? Ma datcha al seruv lechitzat hayad shel Yuval Dayan leJo Biden, achar shehi shara lefanav, haim hi hilbina oto kimo sherabim omrim? Derech agav, li ishit dafka chaval shehi lo עשתה את זה לאובמה, כי לדעתי דווקא ממשל ביידן לא לוחץ על ישראל לסגת בשלב זה. Okay, Roi is referring to an incident which I don't think people in our audience, most of the people in our audience probably aren't familiar with this incident. He's asking about an incident in which a singer in Israel, who's a religious singer, and her name is Yuval Dayan. Biden held out his hand to shake her hand, and she refused to shake his hand because observant Jewish women don't shake the hands of men who are not their husbands. And so for religious reasons, she didn't do it. And people, the secular Jews in Israel went crazy. Ah, how embarrassing. As if Biden, first of all, Biden doesn't even remember one minute to the next what happens. He's in the, Biden was shaking hands with the air. He put his hair in the hand. There was nobody there to shake. He went like this to shake somebody's hand. There was nobody even there. I mean, Biden has become completely senile. Biden is in advanced stages of Alzheimer's. So he doesn't even remember, so don't worry about him being offended. Okay, so let me just say, Roy, kodem kol, he lo asta et ze kidei limchot keneged המדיניות של ביידן, היא עשתה את זה בגלל ההלכה, כמו שאתה יודע. הלכה לגבי נגיעה. ואני מעריך מה שהיא עשתה, אני חושב שזה היה אמיץ מצידה. כמובן, אובמה זה אסור ללחוץ, אסור לגבר ללחוץ יד של אובמה, ימח שמו וזכרו, כי הוא אנטישמי. גם ביידן אנטישמי אגב, גם ביידן היה סגן הנשיא תחת אובמה. אבל הוא כל כך סנילי, הוא כל כך חלש, שהוא לא יכול לעשות מה שאובמה עשה. וזה כן טוב לנו. טוב לנו שיש לנו נשיא ארצות הברית, סנילי, חלש, שפשוט לא מסוגל לעשות הרבה לגבי לחץ עלינו. אבל אני בכלל לא אכפת לי מה ביידן, אם ביידן אהב את זה, לא אהב את זה. קודם כל, הוא כל כך סנילי, אני לא חושב שהוא זוכר אפילו. דקה אחרי שזה קרה, הוא כבר שכח את זה. הוא כל כך סנילי. אז לא, אבל זה כשיהודי עושה דבר כזה, לא בשחצנות, אבל כשיהודי עושה דבר כזה, זה קידוש השם. And what I just said is that it's sanctifying God's name when a Jew stands up for Judaism and does something like that courageously, publicly. Not in an arrogant way, but courageously publicly saying it's against my religious beliefs. I'm sorry, I can't do that. I think that it's a Kiddush Hashem. Okay, Roy now asks, and I quote, Ma datcha al shilton ha-apartheid bidrom Afrika bishnot ha-70? Haim ze haya mutzdak? Uma datcha al ha-uvda she-medinat Yisrael hayta tekufa ha-medina ha-yechida she-eina machrima ota? Toda. And now Roy asked me about the apartheid regime in South Africa and the fact that Israel was one of the only countries, was the only country for a while that was dealing with South Africa. Roy, אין לי שום בעיה עם המשטר הזה, כי אני חושב שאתה יודע שאני חושב שהשחורים האלה באפריקה הם רשעים, אלימים, מקנים, ישראל ניסתה ליצור ידידות עם מדינות באפריקה, והם תמיד תוקים סכין בגבינו. אז לא אכפת לי. לא אכפת לי אם תהיה אפרטהייד. זה לא מפריע לי אם זה יקרה. ואם זה היה באינטרס של ישראל, אם זה היה טוב לישראל, ליצור קשר ידידותי עם משטר כזה, אז ישראל חייבת לעשות מה שטוב לה. ואז אין לי שום בעיה שישראל הייתה בקשר ידידותי או בקשר כלשהו עם דרום אפריקה אז. And what I told Roy is, the blacks in Africa, ungrateful, violent, evil people. And when Israel tried to help black African countries, they always stabbed Israel in the back after Israel tried to help them. Idi Amin, they built a whole airport for him in Uganda, and he used it to kidnap Jewish hostages in 1976. I mean, just ungrateful, vile people who always bite the hand that feeds them. So I don't care if there was an apartheid regime in South Africa. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me when evil people, bad things happen to evil people. It doesn't, especially to Jew haters. It doesn't bother me at all. And Roy asked me, what do I think about the fact that Israel was the only country not boycotting South Africa at the time? And I said, that doesn't bother me either. If it was in Israel's interest to do that, Israel should deal with South Africa. There's no problem with that. We don't owe the blacks in Africa anything, just like we don't owe the blacks in America anything. Ani modelecha Roy. I thank you, Roy. And this is another program that I very much enjoy doing of SJTF. And I just hope that people will help us and that will figure out ways to help the Hilltop youth, because that's the one area where we can really make a difference. And if there's an area we can make a big difference that's very important for Israel's survival, we really have to do that. That's our obligation to do that. And so help us, join with us. Remember, if we work together as a team, we can change Jewish history. We can make this a better world. Be'ezrat Hashem, God willing. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.